Over 100 years ago, there was an English author by the name of Maurice Baring, who was a very good friend of G.K. Chesterton and Hilaire Belloc. Baring and Belloc met in the year 1898, and their friendship endured until Baring's death in 1945. And although he was not as well known as Chesterton and Belloc, who were, at the beginning of the 20th century, two of the greatest Christian writers in England, Chesterton and Belloc had great respect for Baring's artistic and literary ability. The very last novel that Baring wrote is entitled Darby and Joan. And in this novel, one of the characters comments, "One has to accept sorrow for it to be of any healing power, and that is the most difficult thing in the world. A priest once said to me, when you understand what accepted sorrow means, you will understand everything. You will understand the secret of life." Baring's obituary appeared in the Times of London on December 17, 1945, and it was said of him the following: "Above all, Baring was concerned to express the passionate conviction that belief in God alone, can bring storm-tossed humanity to harbor." Isn't that funny? Belief in God is the only thing that will bring storm-tossed humanity to harbor. In today's homily, I want to pick up on this theme, that it is only belief in God that can do this, because as we understand who God truly is, in our own lives, we will come to accept sorrow and discover how it is the secret of life. And it is this idea that is at the heart of today's gospel reading. For here Jesus asks two questions. Question one, who do people say that I am? And here's the amazing thing. From its very inception, people have thought all sorts of things about Jesus. And so he says, what do the crowds think? Well, some say you're John the Baptist. Others say you're Elijah. Others say you're another prophet that has been raised from the dead. In other words, people down through the centuries, all the way back to the time of Jesus, thought that he was, yes, a great man, a great teacher, but that's as far as they went. And then Jesus gets to the second question. He gets to the heart of the matter. And this is so true for us in our day, because today, people have all sorts of ideas about Jesus, and sadly, more and more people don't think about Jesus at all. And so the second question is the most important question, and this is the question that matters to each of you and to me, because you're at Mass today. So at some level, Jesus matters to you. And so Jesus asks each of you the question, who do you say that I am? Who do you say that I am? And it's the answer that we give to this question that is most important. And it is an answer that goes deeper than we sometimes realize. For you see, Peter, as he always does, is speaking on behalf of the 12. And he says, you, Jesus, are the Christ. But here's the thing we need to appreciate. When Peter said that at this time, he equated that with the following. Jesus, you are going to usher in the golden age of Israel. We are going to dropkick the Romans through the goalpost, and they're going to be out of here. And you are going to establish Israel as the superpower of the Middle East. After all, the son of David, that's who the Messiah, the Christ is going to be like his namesake, that great King David. Because when David was king, Israel reigned. There was never a time in our history where we had that kind of power, that kind of economic force, that kind of influence. And so Peter, when he said, you are the Christ, this is what he had in mind. And think about it for a moment. So many people equate God with a world that should be easier. And if God is for real, surely we would be freed of hardship, of heartache, and of harrowing anxiety. However, here's the point. When we come to see Jesus for who he really is, he begins to convert us. He begins to change our perspective so that more and more we come to understand what that priest in Bering's novel said. When you understand what accepted sorrow means, you will understand everything. It is the secret of life. It's this secret that Jesus gives to the 12 in response to Peter's declaration. And let me just read again the key part of Luke's gospel for today. Jesus sternly ordered and commanded them not to tell anyone, saying, "The Son of Man must undergo great suffering. He'll be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, and the scribes. He'll be killed. On the third day, he will be raised." Now catch this. Peter said, "You're the Christ. You're the Messiah." Jesus did not respond with that same title. He did not say that the Christ is going to undergo suffering. He said that the Son of Man is going to undergo suffering. Why did he use that term, the Son of Man? Well, if you know the book of Daniel from the Old Testament, it's one of the prophets. In the 7th chapter, there is this amazing image of God the Father on the throne, and the Son of Man anticipates Jesus Christ. And he comes to the Father and is given an eternal kingdom. And here, though, Jesus now takes that image of the Son of Man from Daniel, and he equates it with suffering, with being killed, and being raised on the third day. Jesus, at this point, will not accept the title of Christ, because he knows that the apostles have a wrong understanding of what that means. What he will teach them, and what he wants to teach us as well, is that in this world, the thing we need to see most clearly about Jesus is that he truly accepted sorrow. He understood that sorrow is the key to life, and he calls his disciples to do the same. Here's what Jesus would not accept. He would not accept the responsibility of being a political savior, and so he rejected Peter's nomination as the Christ. God was going to do something new through him, and central to this plan was the suffering that he would endure. Jesus is very clear. He says, for those who want to be his disciples, there are so many people who believe in Jesus, but they're not necessarily disciples. The word disciple means to hear and to follow after the medicine. And so Jesus is saying, for those who want to be his disciples, they will deny themselves and take up their cross daily and follow him. Now let's think about this. Whatever form the cross takes, some kind of dying is involved. We have to give up, we have to surrender. Think about our most important relationships. If there's no cross in that relationship will not survive. In all our efforts to love, in the way that gives life, freedom, we have to extend mercy to others, we have to die to self, and with that dying comes new life. Because you see, this is at the heart of Christianity. The cross is what happens to those who want to persist in living righteous lives in an unrighteous world. Jesus taught his disciples about the cross in words as he was going to Jerusalem, and indeed from that cross on that hilltop outside of the city. In Jesus, we find someone who redefined the role of what it would be to be the Messiah. He's not going to slay those who are opposed to him, but he's going to love them into new life. And beloved, this is essential, essential if we want to be disciples. If we want to understand what Maurice Bering came to know. And by the way, he suffered profoundly physically in his life. And so when Bering wrote that verse, he was writing it from a place of self-understanding. And let me read his words from that obituary one more time. Bering was, above all, concerned to express a passionate conviction that belief in God can alone bring storm-tossed humanity into harbor. But we're not just saying any kind of belief in God. Not belief in a God of popular opinion. Not belief in a God who had a political agenda to fulfill. but rather belief in Jesus Christ, the suffering Son of Man. He is the only one who can bring storm-tossed humanity into harbor. A humanity tossed by the horror of Orlando's gunshots. A humanity where the political theater of U.S. electioneering sees Clinton and Trump vying to be America's next Messiah. Our own personal humanity, marked by challenges of difficult family relationships, the death of children, suicide, premature death, hardships that come with this economy, anxiety, depression. I've only named a few things that rock our boats, but our boats are rocked, storm-tossed indeed. But it's into this kind of a world that we, as followers of the suffering Son of God, are learning life's deepest secret. And it's this secret that you are to teach Chloe. This is the secret she needs more than any other if she's going to live a meaningful life in this world. And it's this: accepted sorrow as we take up our cross daily. This is what will bring us safely into harbor. But remember that other thing Bering's character said in that quote I used at the beginning of the homily? Accepted sorrow is the most difficult thing in the world. It's the most difficult thing to accept. But here's the beautiful thing about our faith. It's for this reason that we need one who has come from the other world, from heaven, to this world, so that Jesus Christ, the Son of Man, would show us the way to accept sorrow and so discover life's deepest meaning. That's what our baptism is all about. This is what Catholic Christianity means. And it is this alone that can take storm-tossed humanity and bring it to safety.